subject for our meditation together today is the spiritual recovery of the home. The subject is suggested for us by these words in the 35th chapter of Genesis. Then Jacob said unto his household, "Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments, and let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar to God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went." God's first institution that he fashioned for the good of human society was the home. Human society is founded to a remarkable degree on the home. And an orderly development of society follows upon the orderly development of the home. The greatness of any land is revealed in its home. No nation can rise any higher than its home life. One of the most beautiful and impressive pictures in all literature outside the Holy Bible is Bobby Burns' poem, "The Cover of Saturday Night." Every father and mother should read it again and again, as it portrays home life, anchored to God, and bowing obediently to his will. The wise and worthy care of the home is a matter of eternal moment. Well does one of the large women's classes in this church, the Sunday School of the Church, have for its motto these words, "The home for Christ." We are called here to a matter far more important than the secular matters to which we are giving feverish energy and attention all about us. Here is a matter more important than business, quite important as that is. Here is a matter more important than statecraft, quite important as that is. Here is a matter more important than our vast system of public education, vastly important as that is. The care of the home, the wise and worthy care of the home, goes before any of the important causes that I have named. Civilization, to a remarkable degree, is dependent upon the home. Church and state, to a remarkable degree, come back to the home life of the people. And it is plain, must be plain to all of us, that the home life of our land is being terribly undermined and endangered today. What with the telegraph and the telephone, and the daily press, and the automobile, and the airplane, and the radio, what with all these, shall be the outcome for the whole. I repeat, the serious-minded person with eyes half awake must be aware that the home life of our land is being terribly imperiled and undermined. And we are called today back to the home life of the people, perhaps more urgently than are we called by any other call that can come to us. Whoever or whatever strikes at the home life of the people strikes at the very heart of a worthy and stable civilization. Here in our text, Jacob had come to a crisis, very definite crisis, in the life of his own family. Such crisis hours come, sooner or later, to all families. And Jacob wakes up as one out of a terrible dream to the realization of the awful dread that had marked his own steps and the steps of his household. 30 years before our text, Jacob had fled away from his brother Esau, whom he had cruelly wronged, whose birthright he had taken by cheat and fraud. And he had to flee away from his homeland into a land afar. One can see Jacob fleeing from the awful condition that followed in the wake of his awful sin. Goaded by conscience, tormented by memory, he is fleeing away to get away from his trouble made by himself. And night came on, and he laid down to sleep and took of the stone to make a pillow thereof for his head. And while he slept, he dreamed. And in his dream he saw a ladder from earth to heaven, and angels ascending and descending upon that ladder. And God was above the ladder. And he stirred out of his sleep and was greatly distraught. He was filled with fear. He announced that God was in this place. This is none other than the house of God and the gate to heaven. God was in this place and I didn't know it. And then he took the pillar upon which he had laid his head and poured oil upon it. And he made a great vow there to God. If God would go with him and be with him in the way wherein he went and would take care of him, would give him food for his body, food for his body and raiment as well, and would bring him back in safety to his father's land, then God should surely be his God, and he would surely devote one-tenth of all that God gave him to God and his cause. The great hour, the crisis hour. It's an epochal hour, a destiny determining hour in the life of Jacob. But he put his vow away. He forgot his vow. He contemned and despised his vow by sheer neglect. and now 30 years have hurried away. And great changes have come to Jacob's family. The one girl in the family, the one daughter, Dinah, had been betrayed and shamed. And her brother, terribly moved by their sister's shame, sought to avenge him. And on every hand, feuds and bitternesses were in evidence. Jacob's family has gone far down its bottom. And the father, Jacob, wakes up to the realization of it. He stares out of it like a man stares out of some horrible dream. He realizes, as the prodigal realized in the far country, the plight he was in and the plight the family were in. And in that hour, a great resolve came again to Jacob. I'm going to seek to retrace my steps and to repair the past, to redeem what's been lost, utterly to amend my ways, and hence his appeal to his family. He said unto them, arise, let us go back to Bethel. Change your garments, be clean, put away the strange gods that are among you. Let us go back to Bethel, and I'll build an altar there, where God met me in the long ago, where I might have made a great vow to him and have mocked my vow and forgotten it. I'll go back now, and I'll build that altar yet, and I want all of you to go with me. It's a great scene, one of the most moving scenes in all the holy Word of God. And there are deep and vital lessons for us which we may glance at briefly this morning. First of all, we need to see this exhortation that this man Jacob gave his family. Arise, let us go back to Bethel. Be ye clean. Change your garments. Put away the strange gods that are among you. And let us go back to Bethel, where God met me long ago, where I made him a great vow, which I have denied and forgotten, and which vow I would renew, and which holy purpose that once stirred within me, I would incarnate into living reality even yet. Good exhortation. There are certain things about the exhortation that are quite impressive. First of all, it was made in obedience to the command of God. God said to Jacob, arise and go back to Bethel, where I met thee long ago, and where thou didst make the great vow to me. Go back. And Jacob is making this call now to his family, this exhortation to them, in response to the command of God. Oh, what a great thing it is to obey the command of God. Our wills are ours. We know not how our wills are ours to make them thine. Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. Obedience to Christ, that is the governing principle in his kingdom. Ye are my friends if ye do whatsoever I command. Our Lord and our Master is Christ, and his commands are to be implicitly obeyed. That was a pungent thing the immortal John Wesley said to a lot of his younger fellow workers. Far back in the days of Wesley, when he wrought such a great work, he reminded his younger fellow workers, the rules that I have made for you are to be minded by you and not mended by you. Well, now, if Wesley felt minded to say that, certainly with all definiteness and positiveness, Christ could say, these rules I give, these commandments I announce, these principles I enunciate are to be minded by you. They are not to be obeyed. Whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And now Jacob is obeying this command of God. And he is taking his true place now as the head of the family. The high priest in the family now, this man Jacob, taking his proper place. We're hearing much about economics. We're hearing much about statecraft. We're hearing much about this regulation, that and the other. A nation is revealed by its homeland, and no nation will rise any higher than the home life of the people. And if the home life of the people be marked by bad standards, by doubtful practices, by illy expressed conduct, then all the whole social order is involved to an awful degree, because to an awful degree we are bound together in the bond of life. This man, Jacob, gave the right exhortation to his family, and every parent, every father hearing me, to be joined in by every mother, should say with this man, Jacob, let me go back to that great crisis hour where we once vitally and mightily dealt with God, and where in the secret place we vowed a great vow, we registered a great resolve of soul, which we've forgotten to an awful degree. We should go back to Bethel and set up the altar there, yes, back to Bethel. Now then, see what he proposed. I'm going back to Bethel and put the altar to God there, yes, after these long 30 years. Let it be personal with you and me. What about our altars before the face of God? What about our vows that we made back yonder? That we made when the loved one was dreadfully ill? And we went away into the secret place, and unto the depths of the heart's intensity, we poured out our cry to God and made him our vow. What about those vows? What about those vows when in the hour supreme of searching of heart and of testing of heart, we could simply say two words, oh God, oh God. And then we went on and said, stand by me, uphold me, undergird me, go with me where I am to go, be with me in what I am to pray. And I pledge thee this. What have we done to that pledge? What have we done to that vow? What did you do with the vow about church attendance? About church attendance. Everybody ought to go to church when the doors are ajar. And in all particularity, that applies to men and women who say they are Christians. What will we do with that vow about church attendance? About prayer meeting attendance? About Bible study in the Bible school? What have we done with our vow about it? What have we done with our vow? I'm going to try my best to win souls to Christ. Weak and frail as I am, that's a great first note in the marching orders of Christ. Go make disciples. I link my life obediently to that command, and we'll do that thing the best I can. What have we done with that vow? Aren't our altars down? Aren't they forsaken? Look at some of these altars. What about your altar of secret prayer? How much do you pray in secret? How much did you pray today? When the morning light broke in on you in all its freshness and beauty and splendor, how much did you pray then and then later? And as you came to the house of God, how much did you pray in secret today, and for whom did you pray, and for what? What about the altar of secret prayer? What's become of it? Jesus said, and thou, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet and shut the door. And when thou hast shut the door, pray to thy Father in secret. And thy Father who seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. It was when Moses dared to be alone with God that God gave him the sight of that bush that burned and was not consumed. It was when Isaiah dared to be alone with God that God gave him a threefold vision that utterly transformed the young prophet's life. It was when Jacob was alone with God, yonder beside the brook Jabbok, that he met God in a way never to be forgotten, and had a blessing from God more gracious than human speech could describe. It's when you and I dare to be alone with God, no eye to see us but the omniscient eye, no ear to hear us but God's ear, and in that quiet place, we tell it out to him what we hope for and desire and what we pledge him by his grace and guidance to do and to be before his face. What have we done with the altar of secret prayer? And what have we done with the altar of family prayer? What if I should ask now how many in this large throng within these walls, and the larger throng, it may be many times over out in Radio Land. What have you done about this altar of family prayer? How many of you have family prayer? How many of you make it a point once a day to assemble the whole house together, children, servants if you have them, and all, and make humble, grateful acknowledgement unto God, the giver of all good, for his mercies to you, and seek his guidance continuing, and his favor unfailing for the unfolding days and duties ahead? What have we done with family prayer? How can any father, Christian man, be willing for his family to be reared, for his children from tiny tops to go around him, and take that fuel from him, and be to an awful degree molded by him? How can you consent for the day to pass without family prayer? What have you done about family prayer? Some of us can testify that the blessings that came to us in the prayer about the family hearthstone are blessings that are more vivid and more living and more challenging than any blessings that come back out of our childhood years. What have we done about family prayer? Men are listening to me now, maybe by the hundreds, who are at once the same frail, infirm, unworthy as I am. This offer of family prayer is going to be erected in my house. And once a day, for a few minutes at least, we'll pause and let God speak to us out of his words, and then we'll speak back to him out of our deepest hearts through the blessed medium of prayer. What have you done about the altar of church prayer? Church prayer. Church prayer. Oh, the astonishment if we allow the altar of church prayer to break down, to be indefinite and uncertain. The early church gave the primacy to prayer, and the very Roman Empire was shaken to its foundation, because that early church gave the primacy to prayer. And any church that will give the primacy to prayer today shall be visited with the merciful visitation and favor of God. And the people round about shall say of such church, I perceive of a truth that God is with these people. Let's go back and set up the altar. That altar of secret prayer. Nobody can do your praying for you, my brother, my sister. Nobody but yourself can do that praying for you. And then let's set up the altar of family prayer. Frail and unworthy, let's summon the children around us and say, my dear children, Father ought to have done this before. He ought to have done this before. But Father has been timid about his case. Father doesn't feel that he's any particular saint, but Father wants you to forgive him for his neglect, his dereliction, and share with him now sympathetically and cooperatively, and let's have a family altar to God from whom all blessings flow. And then let's come and magnify the altar of church prayer. Think of a deacon being absent for the prayer meeting when he calls under heaven except providential. A deacon in the house of God, in the church of God. Think of a Sunday school teacher being absent from the appointed hour of prayer when we gather up our city and nation and world and plead before the throne of God for his downpouring mercy upon the people. God commands prayer. And united prayer calls forth the downpouring favor of an all-wise and all-merciful God. What about our altar of public prayer? Oh, let's set up the altar again and do it today. Let's do it today. Now let's see what came of it all. Let's see the results of this plea of appeal made by Jacob. Let's see the results. He just called his family around him and said, I've neglected now for 30 years. I've defaulted. I've been derelict. I've been at rest now for these 30 years. And see what's come of it. See the plight this family is in. See the shame on that dear girl of ours. See the condition of these sons in the family. Their hearts on bloodshed fixed and dreadful bitternesses and hostilities everywhere stalking forth as demons in the dark. See the plight we're in. Now every man ought to see about his family. If you have some child that's on the drift, you ought to pay the price in the sight of God for the recovery of that child. Daughter or son, if the habit be wrong, if the behavior be improper, unworthy, every family should give attention here. What are all your boasted gains if you lose your children? What of all the wealth you pile up if the boy goes to doom? If the boy goes to doom, and if the girl shames the Christian religion by her ill behavior, what of it all? What of it all? What about your oil wells and your bank stocks and your bonds here and there and yonder with the children all adrift, caring neither for God nor men, living the selfish, self-centered, and market-doomed life that follows self? It is time for attention from the people of America to the home life of this country. It's time for fresh attention. If I have any judgment at all worth uttering on any subject, the whole life of this country ought to be reviewed now. The conditions are shaking it and undermining it and imperiling it from one end of this country to the other. One end to the other. Now let's see the result of it all. Jacob stated the case and said, "Will you go back with me?" Now see the result. Under that brave, mighty proposal, the whole group went back with their father. I tell you, when a man plays the game faithfully, when a man is true to his Lord worthily, results marvelous. Following the wake, the whole family went back with him. Is there on earth a sight so impressive as a whole home anchored to Christ? Did angels ever look down on another sight so impressive as a whole family anchored to Christ? The whole family went back with him. What else? As they went, the terror of the Lord was on all the cities through which they marched. And the men didn't follow after them to pursue them, but forsook them. They were afraid. When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue which shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the saints of the Lord, for thy righteousness is by me, saith the Lord.
yonder, at last,